We have to stop being U.S. focused alone.
Or else, he says, the pandemic will continue to spread. It's Thursday, August 5th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the Taliban takes its battle into the Afghan capital city, the revival of a previously shut down Hong Kong museum, and China tries to deal with a major COVID outbreak. It is all on today's VOA Asia. As the COVID-19 Delta variant sweeps through the southern United States, which have low vaccination rates, doctors with the Infectious Disease Society of America are calling for more testing and more vaccinations, both in the U.S. and in other countries as well. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
The Delta variant was first detected in India, but it's rapidly spreading around the world. In the U.S., it's fueling at least 80% of new outbreaks, mainly among those who are not vaccinated. The variant can affect even those who have received the COVID-19 vaccine. Dr. Ricardo Franco says the Delta variant makes up an even higher number of new COVID infections at the University of Alabama Hospital. He put the number there at 89%. He added that nearly all patients at his hospital are not vaccinated against the virus.
Data from COVID tracker shows that a vaccinated person is 8 times less likely to get infected by the Delta variant compared to an unvaccinated person. It is 25 times less likely to be hospitalized, and if hospitalized, 25 times less likely to die from COVID-19.
Franco cited the New York Times COVID tracker that shows case rates in low vaccination areas are higher than in areas of high vaccination.
The conclusion here is that vaccination is working through this Delta wave. And more importantly, unvaccinated people are actually benefiting from greater herd immunity protection in high vaccination counties compared to low vaccination ones.
Franco said herd immunity should increase as more people get vaccinated. But there's a problem with the data because fewer tests are being performed and many testing centers in the U.S. have closed. Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel from the University of Pennsylvania said without testing, it's hard to know where the variant is spreading and who is spreading it.
And so we really don't have a good handle on the frequency of asymptomatic, but nevertheless apparently transmissible infections with Delta.
Emanuel said that without widespread testing, new variants will be missed both in the U.S. and elsewhere.
We have to stop being U.S. focused alone, because these variants, you know, in the case of Delta, arose overseas and came here. And so getting the world vaccinated is a top priority and has to be a top priority. We don't know where a new one is going to evolve.
Until the virus is stopped, Emmanuel said the best protection is wearing a mask at public places indoors and even outdoors in large crowds. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
The White House said on Wednesday it's prepared to provide COVID-19 booster shots if needed, suggesting it would not heed a call by the World Health Organization to delay providing additional vaccinations. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said on Wednesday that high-income countries like the United States should hold off on giving more doses until more poor countries are able to inoculate their own populations.
I understand the concern of all governments to protect their people from the Delta variant. But we cannot and we should not accept countries that have already used most of the global supply of vaccines using even more of it, while the world's most vulnerable people remain unprotected.
But White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said that was a false choice, and Washington can both provide booster shots if they are approved for the use in the country and donate excess supplies to other countries. To learn more about these stories, check our website at voanews.com, as well as our many digital platforms. VOA Asia continues. A blast near the office of Afghanistan's main security agency wounded at least three people Wednesday, hours after a bomb and gun attack on a minister's compound brought surging Taliban violence to the capital. Reuters reporter Maha Albadroi has the story.
Two blasts shook high-security areas of Afghanistan's capital city, Kabul, late Tuesday night and again early Wednesday morning. The second blast wounded civilians and a security official near a National Directorate of Security compound, according to police. That came hours after a car bomb exploded and gunfire erupted late Tuesday night, killing several civilians near Kabul's diplomatic district, in a heavily fortified area of the city known as the Green Zone. A senior security official said Tuesday's attackers appear to be targeting the home of acting Defense Minister Bismillah Mohammadi. All of the attackers died in the blast, according to an Interior Ministry spokesperson. The Taliban claimed responsibility for the Tuesday blast, while no group has yet claimed responsibility for the Wednesday attack. Minutes after Tuesday night's blast, hundreds of civilians in Kabul took to the streets and chanted Allahu Akbar, meaning God is the greatest in Arabic, in support of Afghan security forces and against the Taliban. They carried candles and Afghan flags to signal opposition to the extremist group, as they've stepped up offenses in recent weeks. Attacks have risen sharply since US President Joe Biden announced American troops would leave Afghanistan by September, after 20 years of war.
Maha Albadroi reporting. U.S. troops are nearing completion of a withdrawal from Afghanistan. Experts say Afghan women and children face a perilous future. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
When fighting rages between Afghan security forces and the Taliban, many caught in the crossfire are forced to flee their homes. Most of them are women and children. Five such families found refuge in this small house. Among them are three widows and many orphans with nowhere else to go and for whom school is no longer an option. Displaced widow Guldastav says she lost her husband and three sons to the fighting. She tells VOA her grandchildren now provide for the family as trash collectors in Kabul.
Look at these little kids. They're collecting paper and plastic from garbage. Is this work for little kids? What did Ashraf Ghani do for us? What did Karzai do? What did Taliban do for us? They widowed our girls. We've been here for months. No cooking, no meat, no good clothes or shoes. They're still trying to get medicine.
Earlier this month, Afghan President Ashraf Ghani gave Parliament a broad outline of a new plan to reach stability within 6 months. Many question whether the government has that long.
It's been so alarming to watch the gains that the Taliban has made just in the last few weeks since the U.S. began this withdrawal. And it's been really distressing to sort of see the silence of the international community. This sort of disengagement and this sort of feeling like, you know, too bad, shame, there's nothing we can do.
Human rights workers share a concern that the hands-off approach by the international community imperils a generation of women and children that had been mostly shielded from the Taliban.
The Taliban still have same attitude, same behavior, same philosophy for their own self, like that they have their own world. And it's really not possible, or it is difficult for all people of Afghanistan, I'm sure, and particularly for women and the youth.
A displaced man identifying himself as M. Omar tells VOA his family just wants a normal life.
Taliban, you have mothers and sisters like us. The government, too. You have families and mothers and sisters. For God's sake, stop the fighting. For the sake of the Holy Book, stop the fighting. If there is no war, we can go home and work to provide for our families. We left everything behind.
These displaced Afghans say the Taliban set landmines around the homes they fled. They say their children lost limbs. They join the millions of Afghans displaced in and out of their home country. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA Asia. Back in June, Hong Kong officials shuttered a local museum that was dedicated to sharing the violent crackdown on pro-democracy demonstrations on June 4, 1994, in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. As reporter Ria Mogul tells International Edition Steve Miller from Hong Kong, the museum is open once more. Kind of.
So back in June, when the museum was shut, it was shut because the government said that the museum was running under a faulty license. It had something to do with the food license that they were running under. Now, they've been running for years and years and years, and they've never had an issue. And it was this year that they had an issue. Now, of course, ever since the implementation of the national security law last year, Beijing has been clamping down quite hard on any form of dissent or, you know, freedom of expression, especially when it comes to very politically sensitive issues like the Tiananmen Square incident. So it was shut down, and the annual vigil, which is held every year to commemorate Tiananmen Square, was canceled due to COVID concerns. However, we found out that the museum is reopening, but online. And it's reopening after a massive crowdfunding effort from people all over Hong Kong and of course, outside Hong Kong that still support the pro-democracy movement. And everything that was on physically in the museum is now going to appear online, you know, information to do with the Tiananmen Square incident, to do with the crackdown, the military crackdown in Beijing all of those years ago.
Yeah, Ria, I wanted to ask you about the fundraising effort, because the two people who chair the association that put together that annual vigil for June 4th have been arrested in the past. So what do we know about them and really the fundraising effort to reopen the museum online?
Yeah, so in fact, the chairperson of the alliance that runs the museum, he was arrested over the 2019 protests inciting assembly. So he's currently serving time. So he's in jail. And the vice chairwoman, Chow Hang Tung, she was arrested on June 3rd, which was the eve of the June 4th anniversary this year. And she was charged with incitement to take part in an unauthorized assembly. Now, this crowdfunding effort, which has been going on, which has launched this new online museum, has been, and I believe, organized overseas after an assessment over the political risk. Now, ever since the national security law, activists, pro-democracy politicians, they've been very, very careful with what they do, just because there's been a massive crackdown on dissent and any sort of opposition in Hong Kong. A lot of activists have fled Hong Kong. A lot of them are in exile. And a lot of the pro-democracy camps are serving prison sentences at the minute. So, yeah, this effort is a surprise to many. A lot of people are commending it online because, you know, they see it as a positive thing to keep the spirit of Tiananmen Square going despite the harsh crackdown. So, you know, people are seeing it as kind of like a light where there's one that's, you know, they probably need one at the minute more than ever.
Ria Mogul reports from Hong Kong. She was speaking with VOA International Edition host Steve Miller, and the museum itself can be viewed at 8964museum.com. China's worst coronavirus outbreak since the start of the pandemic a year and a half ago has escalated with dozens more cases around the country and the sealing off of the city of Wuhan. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
In Wuhan, the central city where the first cases of COVID-19 were identified in late 2019, mass testing has shown some of its newly reported cases are being caused by the highly transmissible Delta variant, first identified in India. The city has ordered residential communities sealed, preventing people from leaving their homes. In a subsequent order, officials say no one, whether tourist or resident, can leave the city. Meanwhile, another COVID-19 hotspot emerging is in a Seneca area area famous for caves, forests and waterfalls that inspired the on-screen landscape in the Aviator films. I'm Charles Diledesma.
Thank you for being with us. Thank you to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Castillo, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.